Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Like a battlefield.
There's a battle for the soul of America.
We can't let him tear the kingdom down.
This is no game. This is war.
Flesh and blood. But it's between the bad and good. We can't stop until the trumpet sounds. This is war. Not a game we're playing. This is war.
The only question is, which side will you be on? It's time now for a call to decision with Pastor Butch Paul.
Satan's armies come to kill. This is war.
Hello and welcome, my friends. This is Pastor Butch Paul. It is 24 April 2023. Welcome to tonight's program. We're so glad you're with us. And we have got a very special guest coming on tonight. I'll introduce you to you just in a minute. This is a very special guest tonight. I'm excited to talk to this lady and let us tell her experiences. And I don't have a lot to talk about as far as introductions or any kind of commercials. I just want to say we still have the sugar to fiber product here, folks. It absolutely is phenomenal and works wonders for somebody with type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetics. It is a phenomenal product. It's available. It's done. I can't tell you how much. I wish I could tell you how much it's done for me. I really do. I'm amazed. I'm looking forward to actually my next A1C to see what the sugar levels will come down to, because generally, in the mornings now, when I get out of bed, my sugar is between 65 and 100, almost always, maybe 120. It's done that much for me. In the afternoon, the sugars are down almost normal because I take sugar to fiber. Nothing else has changed. I watch my diet. I always have. But nothing else changed. Sugar to fiber works. We have it here, folks, at the ministry. If you call 800-777-4403 or 304-846-4448. Lisa has the prices on. Use credit card, debit card, check, whatever you want to do, and order it if you like. It does work. I would never lie to you. It doesn't work. If it doesn't work, send a bottle back and give money back to you. It works for me very well. And don't forget, if you haven't got our new catalog yet, you call and let us know. It's totally free. You just say, Pastor Butch, I want your catalog. Give Lisa your address. We'll send it right out to you because we want you to have it. We're doing our best to keep everything up to date as much as possible, folks. The products we offer here through this ministry, things that really work, I would not have them available if they did not work. So you call us anytime at 800-777-4403 or 304-846-4448. Love to hear from you. And again, tonight our guest, someone I've been looking forward to having on now for about 2 weeks. Her daughter was on with us a couple weeks ago. Her name is Dr. Renana Moon, M-O-O-N. While her mama and her daddy escaped from Czechoslovakia, and tonight we have her mama on. Mama's name is Malena. I'm going to have her share her story. By the time she's a little girl, living where she lived, what she grew up in, what she saw, and the similarities she's seen today in this country, folks, should concern all of us. I know you and I never lived through this, so we can't be expected to understand all this. But this lady's trying to warn us about what she sees coming for America, a country she escaped to, and now sees it going the same direction as her home country did. Melinda, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
It is so good to have you, and thank you so much for gracing us with your presence tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate what you've done, what you're still doing. and that you come on a radio show like this and share your heart and mind with people. And would you mind telling the folks a little bit about who you were as a young child, where you grew up, about your life where you were, and what it progressed into, if you don't care. Please share that with us.
Well, I was born in Prague, in what was then Czechoslovakia. And I was born just 1 year before Hitler marched in with his army, occupied Czechoslovakia, and World War II began. So I don't really remember beginning of the war, but I certainly know and can remember quite well second half of the war, with the Nazis walking through the neighborhoods, people being afraid of doing anything that might alert them to their attention and perhaps get them in concentration camp. I remember bombing raids at night, hunger, cold, all of that that was a part of the war. And at the end of the war, I was already finished with first grade, so I remember quite well happiness of people and hope for future, for their life that will be in freedom again, free from the Nazis, from the fascist government that was oppressing them and killing many of them for all those years. So this was my early childhood. However, that euphoria did not last very long. There was time, sometime between the end of the war and the new elections that came up. And during the elections, it looked everything normal. We did not know, people did not know. I was already 10 years old or close to it, and people didn't know what was going on. However, our fate was already sealed. Sometime before the end of the war, three major countries met at Yalta. That was Britain, the United States, and Soviet Union, Stalin. And there they agreed that Czechoslovakia will be communist and it will belong to Stalin. So basically the election was stolen.
I want to ask you a question. You said the United States... And who else met to agree that y'all would be communist?
Britain,
United States?
Britain, U.S., and Soviet Russia with Stalin. And the conference was at Yalta. You can Google for it. It's well known. It was at the Crimea, the peninsula that we heard about again now in the news, at a town called Yalta. And the agreement was made there to have eastern part of Europe communist within the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh. So that the people had no say-so.
People had no say-so, and really the elections were stolen, basically, because there was no accounting for anything. It was predetermined that the communists will win. There were four political parties, I remember that, and the communists simply somehow, whoever counted the votes, won, and that was it.
Wow. So, kind of like happened here. So, along those lines, you've seen a similar thing happen here. But when the communists took over, what did they do? What was their first move? I mean, y'all were thinking that you're going to be free again to live your lives like you want to. What happened?
What happened first was that they tried to eliminate anybody and everybody who was in any way self-sufficient. That they closed down small stores, they closed down anybody who was making any money for themselves, like plumbers, electricians, any tradespeople, little people who just were earning their own money with their own hands, and they really did not need any government handouts. They did not need any help from the government, so they pretty much closed down and so-called nationalized everything. They took away all of their property, and it became property of the state. Also, they closed down churches. They disallowed participation in church services. Most of the priests were sent to the coal mines for hard labor, and they simply just abandoned everybody who was religious. They simply were not allowed to go except for maybe old women who disobeyed, but they locked up churches as well. So people could not go in and be religious as they were before. Also, what happened? Yeah, go ahead.
So they shut down businesses. I mean, the government just took them over, basically. They intended to run them, but they were going to be run by the government, not by the independent owners.
Government established government food stores and government run businesses with employees by government. From probably very shortly after the communist takeover, private ownership of any business was against the law. They made a law that nobody could have a private business any longer.
So they put people to work on the farms to produce the food, I assume, to keep the store stocked. But go ahead, please. This is interesting. Go ahead, please.
On the farms, they already from the Hitler's time, they had established quotas of agricultural products that each farmer had to give to the state. So communists continued in that system. Each farmer, and farmers were small, probably like 20, 25 acres each family, and they established how many chickens, how many eggs, how many cows, how much milk, how many potatoes, how much wheat. You know, all products were established, given to them as a quota that they must provide to the state. And they were increasing that quota because they did not want farmers to keep pretty much anything for themselves. They did not want any surplus that they could potentially sell. So they did that for a while. And then eventually they had another law and nationalized all land. So they declared that all land belongs to the state. So farmers lost that ownership, and at the same time, they lost also their livestock. They confiscated all livestock and put it in common holdings. So farmers became employees of the state, just like those small shopkeepers and plumbers and everybody else became employees of the state. Poorly paid, there was increasing shortages of food and of all other products. But everything was run by the state.
So there was nothing left for people, no private ownership of anything at all. That everything was, the business was taken, the farm was taken, the land was taken. So were the people then forced to work where they were assigned, or did they still have jobs they could find on their own? How did that work?
People could not find their own jobs. They were assigned jobs. And also there was a law, new law created, that everybody who was able-bodied of certain age, from probably like 16 to 60, 65, was to be employed. They had to have a job. Job was assigned by the government, but it was unlawful not to have a job. If anybody did not want to work, then they would be put in prison. And they would have to work in prison, of course, because they had camps that were prison-like, where they let these people to work in uranium mines and coal mines and various other heavy labor-type work. And there they would not be paid anything at all. So there was no choice. You had to take work, whatever they gave you. You could not quit the job. It was required to stay there until they released you from that job. And the only time they released you when they were reorganizing or doing something, they did not need you there. But at the same time, they already assigned you to another job. So you had no choice.
And were the families together, or did they separate families too?
Families stayed together pretty much. What happened was, in my case, my grandfather built a house, small family house, and they had a quota for each private residence, how many square feet you can have to be classified as a family house. It was something like 1,200 square feet was family house. anything that was larger, homes that were bigger than that, were declared a surplus, and there were people other homeless people or those that needed housing, they were assigned to those houses. Well, pretty soon they ran out of those houses. So in our home that was under 1,200 square feet, we had all together four other families that were assigned to
and
us.
How many people all together?
We had altogether 16 adults in the house.
16 adults and plus children.
Yes. So it was the house was a four bedroom with a basement of my grandpa's little shop. He was having some art type book binding business originally. So that was basement. We had total of three toilets in the room. We had two faucets, running faucets. So we had to share toilets. We had to share water. There was only one room downstairs in where people could take turns to do laundry by hand, and there was just no way to change that situation. These assigned tenants were assigned also the amount of money they were supposed to pay us, which was absolutely minimal, and that could not be increased. So very shortly, when repairs were needed, for example, plumbing needed somebody to be fixed, or roof or anything, there was no money to fix anything. And also, you could not find anybody to fix it, because it was all run by government. You had to apply up to the government to have somebody, let's say plumber, to send to you, and they promised to send him 6 months later. And if you happen to have, by any chance, we had a neighbor, happened to him that the plumbing got plugged up, and there was a backup of sewer coming into the house. Well, it was not fixed for months. In summertime, it was all running into his own bathtub.
Oh,
it was stinking through the house. He was outside sitting because he could not sit there because it was just a stench of it. It was so enormous. But it just nothing works. You have to understand that this system is a parasitic system. It is not producing anything, and it really is not working for the people. People there realized very shortly that the government is actually our enemy. It is not working for us. It is trying to destroy us. And that is one thing that Americans need to realize, that our government here and now is trying also to destroy us. Their goal is to crash our economy. Their goal is to just do everything possible to make us weak and vulnerable so that they can take over and start ruling us.
Well, obviously, they're trying to destroy the food supply with all the things happening. The factories have been burnt. About 150 factories have been exploded, burned or something, including 18,000 cattle killed in Texas here a week or two ago. When you were there and you saw this, did the people at first think would be okay? I mean, were they content with the communists taking over until this started happening? I mean, what were their thoughts before they took over?
You know, I remember in our neighborhood, we lived on the outskirts of town. So in our neighborhood were two families that escaped from Russia. They were they walked basically behind the military front as the war was ending to escape from communism in Soviet Union. And they ended up in Prague. And they were warning people. They were saying, you know, be careful. This looks just like what we had in Russia before it all started. You know, people did not believe them. They would just say, oh, you know, that's in Russia. It could never happen here. We have such a long history of being a democratic country, and we are just much more sophisticated than Russians were. No, it can never happen. They happen here like it happened to you. And they already lived in it. They didn't know. It was already happening around them. People just did not notice.
And my goodness, and obviously we're going down the same road, and people still don't know it. They don't want to believe it. It can't happen here. I've heard that before many times. So you live there with you and the family, and we wish I had time to get into all the stories about what happened there. But how were you treated by the authorities? I mean, were you treated badly, like slaves? Were you beaten? I mean, what happened?
What happened, one of the first things that they did was to divide society in two groups. There were those people who were educated. They were called intellectuals. And then they were those who were manual workers, who had trades, or you would say blue-collar type workers. And white-collar educated people became enemy of the people who were the workers. So they just separated the two groups very strongly and created animosity. They called them names. They were just like they do here now, very ugly over them. And what happened, my father was working as a journalist. So he was quite well known. He published a couple of books before all the communist takeover, and he just was well known as a writer and as a journalist. Well, what happened was that one day, not long after the takeover, the communists came to him, the political, what we called political, meaning those who were pushing political system. And they asked my father to write an article that was fiction, untrue propaganda in their favor. When my dad refused to do that, he said he could not do that because it is not true and he just cannot write anything like that. Where immediately he lost his position. He lost his job. He lost his investment. He already at that time was partner in a small publishing group. So that got dismantled very rapidly. His books were taken out of bookstores, out of public libraries, shredded. We had to return some money, which he was paid for the last of the published books that he had. And he became unemployed, which was illegal. So very rapidly, because there was a potential that he will be sent away from our family to the coal mines or some such place. Some friends found a job for him in a printing factory as a blue-collar worker. So he worked there until the end of his life, basically, as a worker in the printing press factory. And main tool for them at that time, of course, was the difference between white-collar and blue-collar society.
Right.
And to me, as a child, it was a disaster, of course, because my mother also could not find a job. She had a degree from home economics, and she could not work because she was a wife of a white-collar enemy of the state, of a high degree, because he was not cooperating or anything. So we were for quite a while in a rather dire situation, but at the same time, it allowed me then, since there were no computers and they did not really keep good records, with my father being a blue-collar worker in a factory, being a worker, I was allowed to go to the university. Otherwise, I could not study. If I was any child of a doctor or any professional attorney, office worker, anybody could not go beyond basic education and ended up in factory or in any such work. So as a daughter of a blue-collar worker now, strangely, I was allowed to go to the college. And at the college, they taught us. For three first years, we had classes in scientific communism, in Marxism-Leninism, and in all those communist indoctrination sciences that they had, and they taught us that communism is going to rule the whole world. Excuse me. And it's definitely going to take over without a single shot. They will be able to indoctrinate everybody and just make such a turmoil that they will take over. And the main enemy, of course, was the United States of America. And at that time already, I was in college and I was looking for a way out. I wanted to escape from there, and I did not believe them. I thought, you know, they are such a parasitic system that they do not really create any wealth for people, no any production at all. They just need new territories to suck their wealth out of. So I did think that they will be strong enough to gain such traction. But in that, I was sadly wrong.
Well, you know, I remember Nikita Khrushchev. I'm sure you remember him.
I remember Khrushchev.
He said they would, other than beating his shoe on the podium, he did say they would conquer us and without firing a shot. And they've done it through the public fool system. I call it the public fool system that basically teaches communism now. And we see our so-called government going down the same road at a very rapid pace, trying to enslave the people. But now, so you lived there to how old were you when you escaped?
I was 25.
Okay.
I managed to get out, but I tried for a number of years. Actually, after college, I deliberately took a job at a West German border, small area that Czechoslovakia had with West Germany. Otherwise, it was East Bloc, East Germany, and everybody in the East Bloc. But I took it because nobody wanted to go there. It was a no man's land of alcoholics and gypsies and just bad situation. But I just thought that I may be able to find a way out of there. Well, and I had been to the fence. You know, the iron curtain was real. And the fence was triple barbed wire fence with the middle fence on insulators charged with electrical current to kill people. There actually was an incident while I was there that a soldier walking there slipped on mud and got caught on his gun got caught on the wire, and before they could turn it off, he was dead, just incinerated right there. So it was really difficult in front of that fence was completely cleared area that was plowed and harrowed for tracks with watchtowers, you know, in shooting distance from each other, manned constantly by soldiers. So it was really just very difficult to get out of there.
Well, now,
concentration camp, nothing else but big concentration camp.
And what was crime like there? We got to go to break. Hang on to the break, please. Hang on through the break. Folks, bomb the air. We'll take phone calls. This story is fascinating. Any questions, comments, 844-769-2944. 844-769-2944. I got a few more questions I want to ask you, then we'll take your phone call next half hour. Don't go away.
Satan's army roams the land, seeking souls of fallen men.
Hi, folks. Pastor Butch Paul here. I'm certain that I don't need to tell y'all we're living in unstable times, or as the Bible says, perilous times. We're starting to see shortages of many products in America, cars, clothing, furniture, and even food. We can't do much about the cars, clothing, and furniture, but we can with the food, simply by calling Demand of Foods, the best in store foods bar none. They have a shelf life over 25 years, are great tasting, no GMOs, no chemical preservatives, no aspartame or high fructose corn syrup, and no MSG. Give Demand a call at 888-597-0775. That's 888-597-0775. Or go to Demand.com. Mention the Pastor Butch sent you and get a 10% discount. That's 888-597-0775. You'll be glad you did.
Are you paying an arm and a leg for a healthy alternative lifestyle? Are you tired of products not meeting your expectations? Is it becoming harder for you to have faith in restoring your body to the temple it began as? I know your struggle is real, and I'd be honored to help you and those you care about feel better and thrive. With organic ingredients and no fillers made right here in our own country, many of which are wildcrafted right here in the mountains of Montana, we at Superior Mountain Herbs are blessed to be able to get you the best herbal products with no hassles or misleading information. Truth and transparency is what you get with us. For a free list of products available to hear this month's special as well, please call Summer at 406-274-7579 or email me at green with an E at the end, assistantsummer@gmail.com. That's green with an E at the end, assistantsummer@gmail.com.
There's a lot of talk all over the internet these days about the remarkable benefits of carbon 60, and baby boomers are especially excited about it. Whatever generation you're in, if you want more energy, better health, and a boost in vitality, we invite you to try Gresca's Carbon 60, a stunning development in free radical destruction. Being much smaller in size than conventional antioxidants derived from fruits and vegetables, it is far more bioavailable to quickly mend the toxin-crippled cells in your body. Gresca's Carbon 60 is the only C60 product that is made without the use of undesirable solvents. The only one. Gresca's Carbon 60 was developed by a brilliant NASA carbon scientist, and 95% report positive results from this Nobel Prize-winning technology in just 4 days. Visit C-60.com. That's C-60.com or call 720-600-6040.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
This is war, not a game we're playing. This is a war. Hear me what I'm saying. Pick up your sword and shield. Get on the battlefield. Satan's armies come to kill. This is war.
Folks, we are back. The nice guest has been fascinating, to say the least. We'll get the phone calls. They're already filling up. So if you're calling, the line's busy. As soon as somebody hangs up, you try again. We'll get to all of you as soon as we can at 844-769-2944. Melina, I want to thank you for taking time to share this with us. And I don't think we'll get it all done tonight. We may have to do this again sometime, because what you're telling me is so interesting, scary, and fascinating all at the same time. It really is. And
well, it should scare everybody, yes.
I agree. I totally agree with that. How did you all manage to, I know you say you got cold in the wintertime, I guess you used wood for heat, I assume. Or how did you heat your homes?
No wood allowed. There was all forest became state forest, so you could not get any wood there. The only thing you could were branches that fell off the trees. They were allowed to be picked, but in towns, you did not have that option. So we were allowed very small amount of brown coal to burn with a very tiny amount of kindling to get it started. So my mom cooked once a day, as all other people did, a small fire in the cooking stove, where we had a pot with water for washing ourselves, sponge baths. And that was it. We could not afford, even those people who could buy electrical stoves, they could not afford to pay for the power, so they would not buy that. So it was very difficult. And in wintertime, we had really cold. We had always frost on the window panes on the inside, and it was really cold. I don't remember as a child that it really bothered me much to have two or three sweaters and a hat on and everything. But later on, I could definitely feel it when I was studying, hunched over the table with just candles. Routinely, they would turn power off for at least an hour or two every evening in winter time because there was no power potential to generate enough for the entire part of the country. So that was very routine. We would have power off, and when it came on again, we would have light. But the rest of it, we lit with candles. And my dad was somehow, and I hate to say that, but this is unfortunately truth. There was a landfill not very far walking distance from where we lived. It was on the outskirts, and trucks were coming from government buildings, and government employees were all pretty much communist, and they had comfort. They lived in warm offices. They had entirely different economy for a political elite than for the rest of us. They had their own separate stores with their own money that were different money than for us, and they could buy all kinds of products that were not available for us, including Western goods and fruit, exotic stuff to us. I had never seen a banana until I was way out. A foreign student on a train offered me a banana when I was after college already, and that was the first time I've seen that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But what was different was that these offices were being heated by coke, which is rendered coal for high heat furnaces, for industrial-type furnaces.
Right.
And it was not completely burned, and they were dumping it on this in this garbage dump. And my father somehow found out. And together with other men in the neighborhood, they would walk every day. And, of course, they didn't want to be known as going to the garbage dump because that was below their dignity. And you know, it's just so devastating for the pride of people. So they would be dressed in old but reasonably good-looking overcoat in wintertime. And my mother sewed a large bag, a handbag for him with handles. And they would walk there and dig through that ash heap looking for little pieces of unburned coke. And he would bring that home, so we had a little bit better heat. And also he was sometimes gifting it to people in town who were freezing, our friends. So that was one of the systems how we survived. But pipes were freezing at times, no plumber available. So it was a real hardship.
Well, I assume y'all had outhouses. You didn't have bathrooms in the home, I don't guess.
So we had plumbing. You know, in town we had plumbing, and we had actually a bathtub. In the village, I also grew up. Part of my life was spent with my uncles helping them at their farms east of town, and they of course had outhouses, and they had a hand pump for water to get out of their own well, and that was perfectly fine, no problem with that. So yes, all villages had that.
My goodness. All right. And were there any protests? Did anybody rise up to fight this? I mean, was anything tried or turned around? What happened with that?
Early on, we had some politicians who tried very hard to take it back to democracy, and they probably didn't have any idea that it already was decided and that there was no chance for any change. But they all basically ended up losing their life one way or another. There were mock trials for them, and they were tried as traitors, even though they were eventually, the charges were over 10, but they were dead already, so it didn't help them.
Oh, my. And the people themselves didn't rise up much to speak of?
There were small uprisings. We, of course, didn't know about it because all news were controlled. There were no freedom of journalistic freedom or anything of that sort. All information was coming from the state, and of course they did not report on those uprisings in local areas, and we just didn't know about them. And of course it was before. Now we have computers, so we have ability to communicate much better than at that time. But for example, I don't know what the machine is called. It was called Cyclospill in my language. It was a drum with some ink on it, and you could run copies. It was before Xerox machines.
Yes,
it
yes,
was
yes,
a hand-run
yes.
machine. So if you were caught with that at home, or there was, I remember one woman that was actually sentenced to a heavy prison and disappeared forever. She just had ink on her hands, and somebody noticed and went to her house and found the machine, and of course it was big trouble for her.
Yeah, they were called mimeographs here.
Yeah, yeah, yes, 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 yes. Yes, 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 absolutely. So really, instinctively, we just did not trust anything that was written or told to us over the radio. It was before television, and then television came same way. We just always assume that it's the opposite than what the government is telling us, because most of the time it was.
Well, that's gonna be the same way here. Two more quick questions, then we'll go to phone calls. Before Hitler come in, y'all were basically a free society. You voted. You were a free society to work your own businesses, and you were just basically more or less like the United States as far as allowed to live your lives. Is that true?
Absolutely, yes. Our Constitution was modeled on the United States. And we had our president actually lived in America for a while before he came back and became president. And it was very advanced technologically, industrial country. And all of a sudden, just nosedive down into such poverty and such a horrific situation. It was just very destructive for the country, very destructive. And it ruined not just one or two generations. It lasted until the 1990, and it just destroyed culture, basically, how people behaved toward each other and everything.
What were the people armed like this nation had been?
No.
Before Hitler, they weren't armed?
No, they were not armed. All weapons were confiscated. You could get a weapon only if you were in the Communist Party.
No, I mean before Hitler even came, was a nation
oh, yeah.
armed nation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. My uncle kept his gun. Actually, both my uncle and my cousin, who was older than I, both kept their guns very carefully wrapped in an oiled cloth in the barn on top of a beam. They're not visible to anybody, but it was useless because they were very, very, just alone. There were not enough people to have that.
Oh, wow. Well, unfortunately, folks, if you have any sense at all, you've seen how they're trying to disarm us here. You've seen all the mass shootings that are happening for that purpose, to disarm us, to scare people into giving up their arms and to compromise and surrender their freedoms. Let's go to Let's go to phone for in our town. Let's go to Jeff in Massachusetts. Jeff, come on in. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Pastor Paul. Well, I'm listening to your guest, and all I'm thinking about is my state of Massachusetts. I'll tell you, your testimony, what's your name again? Renata?
Melina.
Renata. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, your testimony is mind-blowing because in my state, everything is about clout. Everything is about connections. And in fact, the inner cities of my state, including other blue states, is literally the bedrock for the communist takeover of these blue states in America. And what do I mean? Low to moderate income housing, socialist housing, bringing in lots of illegal immigrants and people from communist bloc countries who are for the socialist system that are being pumped with propaganda and lies that the CEO class is pure evil and they need to have their money taken. I mean, and people love it because people care about themselves. So what do you think is going to be the end of America, and what do you see happening to the blue states in America, particularly the states that are heavily controlled by Democrats, and when is the tipping point for when we can't get our states back anymore? I think Massachusetts is lost. What do you think?
Well, that's a lot of questions. Go ahead, Melina.
I still would like to have high hope for America altogether. That we will not, in the end, allow this to happen. That we have enough patriotic, smart people who can see through all that, and that we will stand up against it. Because right now we are an occupied country. We have government that is not our government, and that is trying to destroy America. Their goal is complete destruction, be it with this bioweapon virus that got us into bioweapon shots that are killing people, from all this destruction of industry, or small businesses that I had seen before happened here, just the same, churches being closed because of so-called huge, terrible virus that they created somewhere in the lab, and that really was not nearly as bad as they wanted it to sound. And all these punishments to the people, all this indoctrination of our children, this is such an evil to do that. You know, they tried to do it to us in school as well, but we had a close connection to parents and we could see the result immediately. It was much faster than here. Here people still have enough to eat. We had empty store shelves, not just for a week or for a month, but for years. You would come to the store and there was nothing but, it was government-run stores after they closed those private stores, nothing but salt, and maybe in the corner was a barrel with sauerkraut, and that was it.
Wow.
Nothing else. Nothing else. And if you saw a line of people standing in front of a store, you would run there and stand with them in that same line. And you would ask, do you know what they are bringing? And people say, no, we don't know. But we heard that the truck is coming and they are bringing something. And you waited because you knew that no matter what they would bring, you would need it. You needed everything.
Wow.
So people don't have that hardship here yet. You know,
not
and
yet.
That was
not
material.
Yet. Not yet.
But what I was telling to Butch just at the break, it was not even all this hardship that we went through. I would not have left my friends and my family, especially, because of that. But I just hated that lack of personal freedom, that being told to do this, you must do this, you must never do that. And just your life was pretty much belonging to your government. It was not your life. It was their way of just absolutely. We had to have a passport on us at all times. It was punishable. If you did not have it on you, they could punish you by a fine or potentially prison. And in the passport, there was all the information about where you live, where you work. Also, you had to make sure that you went to the police station if you wanted to visit your aunt, for example, for 2 or 3 days, not one day, but a couple of days. You had to get registered there as a visitor. You know, all these things just were too much for me to take. I just did not want to live in the system.
Well, Jeff, we're seeing this happen here now with the 15-minute cities. You know that. We're seeing it start to come together here. Got to hurry. Go ahead, Jeff, real quickly.
I'll wrap it up with this. I believe that there's going to be two Americas. The blue states are pretty much lost because You have an underclass that's parasiting off the working class, and the blue states are lost. Red states, take notes from this lady. God bless you, Pastor Paul. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it. Let's go to Georgia and talk to Tom. Tom, come on in. Welcome.
Hey, Pastor. Ms. Molina, you mentioned Yalta, but your country was actually betrayed before that. In 1944, Churchill went to Moscow and met with Stalin, and they hand-wrote out a note where they listed the countries under the Soviet bloc at the time and divided the percentages about who would control what portion of it, and that document was called the Naughty Document. And
yes.
After the war...
Yes.
You're familiar with that?
Yes, and it actually started even before that. At Munich agreement, Czechoslovakia was given to Hitler. So, you know, it was a whole series like
right.
that. Small country, who the heck cares, you know? So it was one gift after another.
That's right, and that's why after World War II, it was either Italy or Greece had a communist uprising, and England sent in troops to quell it, and Stalin didn't say a word because it had already been agreed upon what was East and what was West. This whole thing is
yes.
staged.
Yes.
Well, Tom, they move us around like pawns on a chess game. I mean, they know what they do. This don't people since history began. But we think we are independent, running our lives. We're maneuvered also, not as much as we were in Czechoslovakia, but Americans are starting to be maneuvered. With the example with the COVID falsehood. How many people took the jabs? How many people quit their jobs? How many people lost their businesses because of that? Because they followed the rules. I mean, they were maneuvered into it and they obeyed it. And look where we are now.
You got it. And, Pastor, you asked, were there any uprisings or protests? Where are ours?
No, there aren't.
You know? I mean, we're supposedly educated on what is and what is good history and what is horrible history. We got it in front of us. All we have to do is read it. I'm sorry you had to go through this, ma'am, and I'm sorry that you're watching it happen in the place where you call safe refuge. I pray for the best, but I don't think it's coming. It won't happen here. My dad said that. I told him there was in high school. I told him there was going to be a communist revolution here in this country, and he said it will never happen in America. And
don't
later,
feel sorry. Feel sorry. We just simply must not let that happen. That is what we have to stand against, because we are the only country in the whole world that has a potential to stop this. It is not a U.S. situation. This is going on around the entire world.
I just had seen
today from Australia, they are killing their large millions and millions of bees, honeybees, pollinator insects, so that they will not have crops. You know, that's a concerted effort to create hunger around the world and to basically get rid of the population in whichever way they can. And
that's
we just cannot allow that
that's
to happen.
True. Well, you know, at least we... I'm sorry, go ahead, Tom.
You can drive great swaths of people with fear and hunger.
You sure can. You sure can. Satan drives by fear. Christ leads by faith. We seem like we want to choose Satan's way all the time. Good call. Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Good call. All right, let's go next to Pennsylvania and talk to Daryl. Daryl, come on in. Welcome.
Right, and I want to ask your guest a question, and that is because I was born just right after World War II. I'm 76 years old. Were you required when you started to take some classes on socialism, et cetera, in Czechoslovakia once it became communist, were you forced to learn Russian language for about 2 to 3 or 4 years?
I had German when I was in school during war. That was German only. When war ended, it switched immediately to Russian. So I had Russian all those years from grade school all the way through the university. Yes.
Yeah, I figured you probably did. Я говорю немножко по-русски. I studied Russian language. I was stationed in East Germany. I got to see the wall there, the barbed wire. I saw the people try to escape and fall on the barbed wire and get gunned down with machine guns. And I was right near the what they called the Berlin Wall in Germany. So I knew a lot of people that fled the Soviet Union, some of my teachers, and I heard the stories and saw the tears flowing down their eyes of what it was like to live in a communist country, the East German Stasi, the Russian NVKD and KGB. And Pastor Butch knows my background, and ma'am, I fought against communism a good bit of my life. Like I said, they trained me in the Russian language, taught me about Russian history, communist history, and you're right, you're 100% right, we do not want to let the United States fall, because when the United States falls, what little freedom is left in the world is going to die also. And so, yes, thank you for having the courage to come on and speak. Thank you, Pastor Butch, for having the courage to have this courageous lady on your broadcast. And I'll just hang on to listen. But, yeah, I don't like the smell of everything, the lay of the land. I've seen this happen too many times all around the world, whether it's Pol Pot's Cambodia, whether it's Mao Zedong's Soviet Union, or China's Communist Party, and then or Joe Stalin's and Nikita Khrushchev's Russian communism. It stinks wherever it is. Wherever it is, it brings rivers of blood and rivers of tears. God bless you, ma'am.
Thanks, Nicole, dear. Yes. Appreciate it. We're in our time so quickly here. I mean, this hour is flying by. We got about 2 minutes here. Now, very quickly, tell us how you escaped out of the country. Very quickly, take about a minute and tell us how you escaped.
Well, it will take much longer than just 2 minutes.
I can imagine.
Let me say that I tried for a number of years, ever since I was in my later teens. I tried to do it by getting involved with glider group flying, and I never progressed to more than just pulling gliders down the slope to get other people hoisted into the air. So I tried to work on the border, as I mentioned, you know, so we will need to talk about it another time. It was just much more involved than that.
I want to have you on again within a couple of weeks, if you don't mind, Melinda. I want to continue this story, if you don't mind joining me again sometime.
Sure, would be glad to. But let me tell you that I came here legally. I was in Austria. I ended up in Austria as a political refugee. For 6 months, I was vetted thoroughly during that time. And I came legally. I had to sign that I would never go on any public support of any kind, that I would take care of myself, which I
Amen.
Did.
And, Amen.
And absolutely, I was allowed to come here on a flight that was paid for by the government. However, we were asked to reimburse government again, which I did within 1 year. My very first savings from my job went to reimburse this flight government.
Melinda, we are out of time, but I'm going to call you up and do another program real soon, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
God bless you, sis. Thank you. And wow, folks, we'll see you tomorrow night with another great broadcast. Wow. Y'all have a great night. Good night.
Satan's army roams the land, seeking souls of fallen men.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.